Politics Uncensored with Ali Milani and Zoe Grunewald on Fubar Radio.
Hello, you're listening to Politics Uncensored with me, Zoe Grunewald.
And me, Ali Milani.
Today is the Gorton and Denton by-election. The polls are open, but it's still looking neck and neck between the Greens, Reform and Labour. Who will clinch it? This and more in the show.
As always, you can find us at Politics Uncensored UK on social media. But first, it's the Week Unwrapped.
Kemi Badenoch has stood by comments she made in the chamber earlier this week where she called Labour pedo defenders. Ali, this was quite extraordinary. I'm going to play a clip for you of this moment. So this was during PMQs. Kemi Badenoch basically said that people were calling the Labour Party pedo defenders. Take a listen.
The Prime Minister has the cheek to talk about my party being smaller. His party is smaller too, including one MP who was arrested for child sex offences. Yeah. So perhaps before he gets on his high horse, he should ask why his backbenchers are saying that they're being called the pedo defenders party. Yes, yes. So why don't we get back? So if he... Yes, I didn't say it.
She didn't say it. She's just repeating it.
Yeah, I might start doing that from now on, saying stuff and then saying, I didn't say it. Someone else said it.
I mean, it's an extraordinary thing. Look, do you remember?
It's like a bit like Donald Trump. Remember, you know when he says people are saying?
Yeah. Do you remember? I'm not sure when it was. It was when David Cameron was Prime Minister. Dennis Skinner got kicked out of the House of Commons chamber for calling David Cameron Dodgy Dave. There was also a Labour MP during the COVID years who called Boris Johnson a liar and was also kicked out of the chamber for
Dawn Butler.
Was it Dawn Butler?
Yeah.
Okay, for unparliamentary language. Please tell me how dodgy and liar is unparliamentary, but pedo defender is perfectly appropriate for our parliamentary democracy.
Can I just add another example to that? My favourite
one
of all time. I think it might have been Skinner again. He pointed to the opposite side of the chamber and said half of them are crooks. And the speaker, I think John Bercow at the time, said, you've got to retract that. He says, I retract that, Mr. Speaker. Half of them aren't crooks, which I really enjoyed. Yeah, I don't know. But, so the thing is, this is true, in not that Labour is the pedo defenders party, but that people have been calling Labour MPs that. It was briefed to a few political journalists, and I think that's where Kemi got it from, because as we know, Kemi is chronically online. And lives on Twitter/X.
On Reddit.
And probably on Reddit, yeah. I would love to get my hands on whatever burner account she has on Reddit, because I can imagine her sat at 1 a.m. You know how Trump sits on the toilet at 1 a.m. and tweets? You can imagine Kemi Badenoch is sat probably in her front room somewhere at like 3 a.m. with all the other lights off and only the laptop light illuminating her face as she like scrambles writing paragraphs and paragraphs on some sort of like far right Reddit account. But basically, it had been briefed to journalists that this is something that Labour MPs are facing when they're knocking on doors and talking to people out in their constituencies, given the amount of scandals from Epstein to Mandelson to Doyle to now, I think, another Labour official, that this is something that's been thrown at Labour MPs. And she made a point of saying it was kind of in the middle of a question, but it's the only thing anyone really took away from PMQs. She focused PMQs on student loans, which we'll get to in a bit. But it was this comment that was mostly taken away. And I can say it definitely touched a nerve amongst the Labour MPs, not just in the reaction that you saw in the chamber, but also what I heard on Labour MP WhatsApp groups, because this is a sore spot for them, because it is something that they're being called, obviously, and it's something that you don't want to be called on the doorstep of all things. Whether she meant it to or not, it definitely caused a bit of a stir amongst the Labour Party parliamentary party.
I think it's a pretty extraordinary testimony of the sort of depths to which our political language and the rhetoric used by even frontbench politicians has fallen over the past few years. And I can't help but think, you know, not that long ago, 5-10 years ago, MPs were kicked out of the chamber for calling other politicians liars. And you might argue, I mean, actually, we found out, particularly in the case of Boris Johnson, they absolutely had a point. He was found to have willfully misled the House of Commons. But there is a reason that we have standards in Parliament around the sort of language that MPs use. And I would argue that that upholding those standards is important for having a functioning Western democracy. Because if you look at the sort of language and people are using on X, the way they speak to each other, the sort of nastiness, the cruelty, I would say that is a precursor to the mistreatment of minorities, immigrants, you know, that dehumanizing language. As soon as you allow that kind of, that sort of flavor of language to enter political discourse, I think you're basically setting the stage for cruelty as policy. And I think it is, you know, she tried to defend herself saying, I'm just reflecting that people are saying this. I'm not calling them pedo defenders. I'm merely saying that even they are saying they're being called that. But when she was on LBC, Ian Dale was trying to pin her down saying, do you believe that? And she wouldn't answer it. So clearly she wanted to repeat that line. She wanted it to be taken on by people. And what I would say is the Labour MP, Natalie Fleet, who's been pretty outspoken about trying to fix the violence against women and girls. She was groomed at the age of 15 by an older man who raped her. She became pregnant with her first daughter, and she's spoken of wanting to be a voice for other women who are victims of grooming and sexual violence. She said the language was really upsetting. She said it put activists in danger. And Kate Amos, the daughter of the murdered MP, David Amos, also called on Kemi Badenoch to apologise. But she, in typical Kemi Badenoch fashion, didn't have an ounce of empathy for any of these people and said, don't feel sorry for Labour MPs. These people dish it out, but they don't know how to take it.
Yeah, so I think you're right on parliamentary language. I don't like pretty much a lot of the kind of parliamentary traditions that facilitate the debate in the chamber. I think they're really outdated and just ludicrous in some positions. But the whole point is that the House of Commons is the standard bearer for national discussion, certainly on politics. And so if that descends into the mud, then everything else gets even worse. Mm. You're going to get dragged down all at once. I'm actually quite surprised that the Speaker didn't step in, especially the Speaker's an ex-Labour MP.
But you know, he was too busy dobbing Peter Mandelson. Yeah,
can I say... I don't think he's very good.
Well, Lindsay Hoyle.
Yeah.
So I mean, he has a different way of going about things, I think, than John Bercow, who was a very interventionist speaker, right? But yeah, I'm surprised he didn't step in. I just want to clarify the Peter Mandelson comment. Of course, refers to the fact that in an extraordinary turn of events, Lindsay Hoyle tipped the Met Police off, and we'll come into this. Maybe we should just move into this.
And the Met Police snitched on him.
Yeah.
And then had to apologise.
Yes. So. As we know, Peter Mandelson was arrested on Monday, only a week after Prince Andrew was arrested. What has been even more fascinating about this was Mandelson's lawyers said that police officers arrested him because they were worried he was a flight risk. It turns out that it was Lindsay Hoyle who told the Met Police that he thought Peter Mandelson was a flight risk because he overheard a conversation in the Virgin Islands that made him think that Peter Mandelson was going to flee to the Virgin Islands. I mean, what the hell is going on here? It's like a Carry On film.
What is going on?
Also, you can just imagine, like, you know, Lindsay Hall sipping a cocktail in the Virgin Islands just from his sunbed overhearing someone saying, I wonder if Peter Mandelson will end up here next week. And he, you know, he really thought he should repeat that to the Met Police.
We are really in the season finale of the United Kingdom.
Yeah, like, I agree.
That sentence that you just said really brought home for me how we're fucked.
Yeah, we are. And obviously Peter Mandelson, we should say, strenuously denies wrongdoing. Also completely denied that he was a flight risk. Yeah. But what is also bizarre is the fact that the reason we know that Lindsay Hoyle tipped off the Met Police was because the Met Police told Peter Mandelson that this happened. I mean, you just kind of go, I mean, it isn't, when you hear the incompetence of these institutions, it isn't a surprise that Epstein was allowed to run riot for 2 decades, right?
Yeah, so this isn't funny, but it just gives you an indication of the, like we said, the incompetence that exists in all these institutions. Because a lot of people at home listening will be thinking, we're talking about the British Parliament, we're talking about the Metropolitan Police. These are like major institutions that say trillions of pounds in the future of like Western democracy. But one told, basically, the Metropolitan Police told Peter Mandelson where their anonymous tip came from. But actually, it turns out, told them that it was the Speaker of the House of Lords, not the House of Commons.
Okay, right. So even more incompetent.
So they couldn't even tell the difference between those two. Obviously, the House of Lords Speaker then denied this and said it wasn't me, what's that Shaggy saying? It wasn't me. And then Lindsay Hoyle had to come out right before PMQs and obviously released a statement saying it was me.
Oh my God.
To which then Peter Mandelson's lawyer said no. The Met Police said it was the House of Lords speaking. No, it was just, we're all fucked.
Oh, we are all fucked. Anyway, I mean, this arrest is very interesting and I'm sure we'll be covering it in the weeks and possibly months to come. He has been released on bail. Prince Andrew was obviously released under investigation.
Is there a difference between the two?
Yes. Yeah, so yeah. Bail has specific conditions. Investigation right. means that, you know, like, for example, giving up your passport so yeah. you can't flee to the Virgin Islands. What is particularly interesting about both Mandelson and Andrew being investigated for misconduct in public office is that there has never been a high-profile politician charged with misconduct in public.
Oh, really?
90%. It's actually very difficult. I was doing some research on this. It's actually a very difficult crime to get convicted of. The threshold for evidence is really quite high and quite difficult to ascertain. Most people who are convicted of misconduct in public office are like police officers or prison guards, where it's much more kind of case open and shut.
Like that lady who had an affair with
in Wandsworth Prison.
But also, isn't there a really harsh sentence for it? Isn't it life in prison?
It can be life in prison.
Yeah, that's
so
crazy.
I would say, you know, we'll obviously keep an eye on this. We'll keep reporting as we can do in these situations when there is an ongoing police investigation. But I would say, knowing what we know about misconduct in public office, the threshold is very high. Mm. Let's touch on student loans, because this has been a story that we've been covering. And it has sort of exploded, I would say, over the past couple of weeks. And in my eyes, it looks that we're going to see another Labour U-turn over this. So the tide is turning as public opinion turns against the current student loan system. Just months ago, it was considered a dead topic with no political relevance. Now, Tory leader Kemi Badenoch has come out against Plan 2 student loans. In PMQ, she dedicated PMQs to this week. She accused Starmer of taking from students to give to Benefit Street. She said he needs to fix the student loan system. The reason this has blown up is obviously because Rachel Reeves throws the repayment thresholds in the last budget for student loans, which basically dragged more students into paying more and paying earlier. Ali, what do you make of all of this? To me, it feels like Labour is going to have to U-turn on this, because it is clearly an unfair system. It's clear that the terms of the loans have changed and there is a potential case to be asked about being missold. And it feels like the Tories have outflanked them on this. Even the Lib Dems say they're going to do something about it.
Yeah. Be nice, actually, not now, it would be nice and interesting if we were still in the European courts as to whether there'd be a case to answer in the European courts on this. But clearly, thanks, Boris and Nigel.
But can't we just take it to the European courts anyway? I mean, this is what Reformer is banging on. Can someone not just take it to the ECHR?
I mean, it's so clearly a scam, right? That even politicians, even those responsible for putting the scam in place, are now calling it a scam and can't deny that it's a scam. And I think one of the reasons why it's so politically pertinent is that there are so many people on this plan because it was at the peak time. Obviously, I was vice president of the National Union of Students at the time, so I was kind of there when it happened. So many people were. It was at the peak time of people going to university, and obviously everybody was taking out a loan, and pretty much no one knew what the terms of these loans were or the details of the terms changing. So now what happens is, I think a couple of journalists pioneered this story coming out, and now everyone's logging onto their student loan website and looking at these giant numbers and the amount they're having to pay, and are pretty royally pissed off. I think Kemi touching on it is interesting politically, because obviously it was her government that tripled tuition fees alongside the Liberal Democrats. But she's trying to approach it from under new leadership, under new management system. And I think she has kind of snookered the Labour Party. Georgia Gold, who is a junior minister in the government, had an all-time terrible media performance on this, where her answer was on why they've frozen the repayment thresholds and push more students into more debt and having to pay earlier, was, well, there's just, we've got a lot on our plates, which didn't go down well.
I mean, as if the crippling cost of living crisis, housing crisis, affordability crisis that is hamstringing young people, causing young people not to be able to put down roots, not be able to move jobs, not be able to have families, isn't one of the major defining issues of this government and indeed our generation. Mm-hmm. They're just too busy attacking the Greens for wanting to legalize heroin.
What
kind of argument
which
is
I don't
that
even
pathetic?
Think is the Greens policy.
I think they want to do decriminalize drugs, right? I mean, but my point is that's the narrative, right?
yeah but I think you're right, by the way. I think they'll U-turn on this because I just think It's too salient an issue.
They haven't U-turned on something in a while and they need something to U-turn on.
He probably misses it. He probably misses a good U-turn.
He misses a good U-turn, like the touch of a woman. Okay.
That was really good.
It was very poetic. I mean, I absolutely think they have to U-turn on this. I think there's no way they can defend this. And the fact that they will cling on to the triple lock, for example, and say that the public don't have to fund other people's academic futures, yet we should continue pouring money into pension pots.
So here's an idea. What about you turning on the triple lock and then using that money to free students of student debt?
So, I mean, how long do we have? My thoughts on the triple lock. I mean, okay, look, clearly this whole thing is just a generational unfairness where the older people are prioritized at the expense of younger people. The problem with the triple lock is we still have pretty low state pensions comparative to the rest of Europe. I think we would be much better putting up the state pension and means testing it so all those millionaires are not getting the state pension. And when they say to you, but I've paid in all my life, and what, now you're just going to take my state pension away from me? I would say, isn't it awful when your plans are scuppered because the terms of what you were promised change?
Student loans. Yeah. It costs £9.5 billion for each batch of graduates to scrap tuition fees. Mm. It's not that much considering how much money you get back from education. For every £1 invested, £14 back, I think I've said on the show before.
Yeah. So, and of course, the fact that, you know, when all these people go to university, for a lot of them, there were no other routes.
I'm not going to take a lot. The reality of this situation is someone will scrap this. Mm. A government will scrap this eventually because it's unsustainable. Mm. Not enough people are paying it back. Not enough is being paid back into the system. And it's a scam for both the students and for the taxpayer. So someone's going to scrap this eventually. Why not do it now before?
And it should be a Labour government. It should be a government that cares about young people, their employment prospects, making things fairer, reducing inequality. So, for God's sake, get on with it. Right, okay, that is it for the Week Unwrapped. Stay tuned, because coming up after the break, we're going to be breaking down the neck-and-neck race that is the Gorton and Denton by-election. Stay tuned.
Politics Uncensored with Ali Milani and Zoe Grunewald on Fubar Radio. Follow us at Politics Uncensored UK for more from the show.
Welcome back. You're listening to Politics Uncensored with me, Zoe Grunewald.
And me, Ali Milani.
So, polls have opened in a three-way battle for the Gorton and Denton by-election between the Greens, Labour and Reform. Will Labour hold the seat, or will Reform gain more ground? Or, possibly, will the Greens back up their left resurgence? This is a really interesting by-election because for the first time, it feels like we really have no idea where this is going to go, right?
Yeah.
Like, it could be any of those three parties taking the win tomorrow morning, and each one will be incredibly significant in defining the rest of this year politically. The first thing we should mention is the fact that we are not even bothering to think about the Conservatives here, which... Sure, this is a traditional Labour heartland seat. Like, that's not surprising. But the fact that the only challenger on the right is Reform, and the Tories are not even nibbling at that, is significant.
Yeah, they could lose their deposit, which is a conversation we've been having. I think they need 5% to keep their deposit, and they're polling at 6%.
And what is their deposit?
I think it's the money that you pay to how much is it? It's 500
to field a candidate.
I think it's 500 quid you pay or something like that.
I mean, I would say it's only 500 quid, but from the way CCHQ is hemorrhaging money, they're going to need that 500
quid. So should we talk about where we are? So Opinion did a poll. And this is an actual poll because we'll talk about dodgy graphs and fake polls.
Matt
later.
Goodwin's polls.
Yeah. So the Opinion poll of the headline voting intentions in Gorton and Denton has all voters basically. Greens are up on 28%. Mm-hmm. Labour second, again, on 28%, slightly lower than the Greens. Reform on 27%, and then the Tories on 6, Lib Dems on 4, and others on 6. So it's a three-way tie of 28, 28, 27. Oof. Where the Greens have a slight advantage in the poll is likely voters. So these are people, obviously, the voting intention for all voters is how would you vote if you were to vote today, and then they're asked if they're likely to vote or not. So Greens have a two-point advantage on 30, with Labour and Reform both on 28 on likely voters. But this is all within the margin of error. It's the from my time up there to the noise I'm hearing on the ground is that it's a very, very tight three-way race. And as of this morning, I actually heard Reform struggling a little bit compared to Labour and the Greens. I know I predicted last week that I think Reform might edge it. I'm now not sure that from what I'm hearing and what I saw that they'll be able to pull through. So it'll be about how many votes they take away and from who between Labour and the Greens.
So what was interesting was we heard that Keir Starmer was being told to stay away from the constituency, that Labour were sort of fielding the ground for a bad loss. They were talking about, you know, they were basically expectation managing for a loss here. But over the past week, they're feeling a little bit more ambitious. They're feeling like actually...
Well, he went there, didn't he?
Keir Starmer actually visited the constituency, which is pretty significant.
And very, very rare. Mm. So generally, sitting prime ministers don't visit by-election results. And so when he went, I was a little bit surprised. And I ended up having a bunch of conversations with different people because I was shocked that he went, because that then firmly puts the result at your seat. Why would you risk that politically? And I was told, and I think this is true, that traditionally in a by-election, what you do is to say, we're behind by 1 point, we're behind by 2 points, or we're only up by 1 point, we're being squeezed by Greens, for example. And what that does is it sends a message to your voters that you need to come out and vote because this is a tight election. They can't do that in this election because there is a strong anti-reform vote in the constituency, as there was in Caerphilly. So if they say that we're being squeezed by the Greens, then that sends a message to your voters that your tactical vote to stop reform is Greens. And so they're actually having to do the opposite of what they traditionally do, which is expectation management. And they're having to actually say, we're the best chance, we're winning, basically. And a large part of Keir Starmer's attempt, because by the way, if I'm Angeliki, who's the candidate there, I don't want that guy anywhere near my constituency or my seat, right? But part of the reason why he has visited, or so I'm told, is to send a message to the voters that they think they're going to win and they're confident and that they're the anti-reform vote.
That's really interesting. Okay, let's talk a little bit about some of the controversies that have occurred during this campaign, because it has been one with plenty of headlines, and that wasn't surprising considering the significance of it. Not that long ago, a lot of Labour MPs, commentators, media types were saying, if Labour lose the Gorton and Denton by-election, you could see the party move against the Prime Minister. So it's not unsurprising that, or not surprising, I should say, that this has been so widely covered by the media. But there have been plenty of things to cover. So three incidents related to the behaviour of political parties has resulted in complaints to the Manchester police.
They must be fucking done with it.
I know. The local academic Professor Rob Ford, who used to work with Matt Goodwin, who is the Reform candidate, was quoted in green leaflets without permission under the headline, "Everyone agrees Labour are done." Ford said he did not endorse the Greens. The Greens have also faced criticism as a video appeared showing campaigners tearing down Labour signposts and putting them in a skip. Reform have also not been without their controversies. So a leaflet dropped through the doors in the constituency claiming to be from a concerned 74-year-old neighbour called Patricia Clegg sparked complaints to the police. Clegg's son claimed that she never signed off on the letter and has received a backlash online.
Oh, so we found Patricia.
Yeah,
because for the longest time, people didn't know if she was real and they were looking for Patricia. I hope you're well, Patricia.
Reform have also been involved in a printing error. They sent about 81,000 leaflets to the constituency voters from a concerned neighbour, which did not state they've been funded and distributed by the party. Presumably that is Patricia Clegg.
Mm-hmm. I've done that before, by the way.
What?
I did that in the election.
Sent 81,000 leaflets by accident.
We sent leaflets without the imprint by accident, and it was entirely my fault, and the police knocked on my
As in it, did, it wasn't clearly marked.
So I think they explained it as well. When you send leaflets out, you have to say promoted by X from the Labour Party, and we had a double-sided letter that I had written to all constituents, and I logged onto the system and I went, no real letter is double-sided. So I got rid of the second half, which had the imprint on it, and then the police called.
The campaign materials are cheeky. They do definitely push them.
Except this one was from me and it had my face on the top of the leaflet. So it wasn't from someone else.
I believe you, Ali. Yeah, okay. I believe you did it in good faith.
Met police might be listening.
but like they will try and push it as far as they can to make it look not like a campaign leaflet. And we see that. I mean, listeners might recognize getting something through the door that looks like a local paper, and only if you read carefully do you realize actually it's campaign from one of the political parties. Reform have also been accused of allegedly trying to bus in supporters from as far away as Blackpool and Kent to dominate audiences. And Labour, too, have been embroiled in controversy over a campaign leaflet.
This one is wild.
Residents in Gorton and Denton received a flyer purporting to be from a firm called Tactical Choice. Text on the leaflet had said the strategic choice would be Labour candidate Angelica Stoggia. The flyer reads, the Tactical Choice says vote Labour. But it's not a real organisation. Labour.
They've also created a little logo. Which are...
Yeah, that is very naughty, in my opinion. Yeah. Labour's also been accused of gaslighting the public with an edited Reform clip of Matt Goodwin saying, well, it appeared that he was deriding Manchester. Labour shared the video on X of Goodwin telling the audience he was unfortunate enough to be in Manchester. Goodwin hit back claiming the statement was referring to a Conservative Party conference. And you know, I loathe to defend Matt Goodwin,
yeah,
but
that
he
one,
is right.
Yeah,
that was taken out of context.
That was taken way out of context. Yeah.
The thing is, right, I think they don't, the political parties here, all of them, are so desperate they don't care, really. Because they know that one campaigning mishap, which they can sort of throw their hands up in the air and said, oh, it was an honest mistake, it kind of doesn't matter. Like, they might get like a sanction for it, there might be a bit of uproar, but ultimately it will be subsumed into the general chatter around the campaign. And just as it is when they put out these kind of hideous adverts during election time, they don't care if it upsets people because they know there will be some people who see it and it changes their mind. There will be enough people who saw that clip of Matt Goodwin deriding Manchester and they will think that's what he thinks about Denton.
I think you're right, by the way. I think, and I haven't heard this, I'm just saying this is my gut feeling. I think that all parties will be thinking, whatever, we get slapped with a fine afterwards as long as we win the election. That's the most important thing. That's certainly what people like, for example, Starmer or Polanski and others. I don't know, maybe Polanski's not, but certainly Starmer might be thinking. Do you know what it feels like to me? I'm going to throw a sports reference at you. I hope that's okay. Or a football reference specifically.
Not okay, but... Okay. I'll
so it feels like we're in extra time of like a semi-final game and black people are just going down injured and like no one's playing football anymore.
Yeah.
If that makes sense. They just need to get over the line.
Yeah.
And everything will be dominated by the result, basically. The tactical voting one is wild.
Here's
what I wanted to ask you about. Did you see the meltdown online from the Green, Urdu and Bangla video? Did you see that?
No.
So the Greens are obviously targeting Muslim votes and minority community votes. And they created a little video where it had text and the language was in Urdu and then in Bangla later on with the video. And like the far, obviously you're not on Twitter, so you live a much better life. But the absolute meltdown that like far right Twitter went into, how dare they speak English, this is England, I don't want your Sharon law in my country. It was crazy. And then the Greens followed it up by putting a Bangla video out, which
I think Zach Polanski has run, or should I say Hannah
Spencer
has run a really interesting campaign where they are trying to be much more kind of relatable, chatty, social media driven, like it's almost like kind of Mamdani style of like, we're just like ordinary people trying to make a difference here.
But, and I know it's going to be the next segment, what if they don't win? I think that's a significant risk for them. Because for all the talk of the being like leading in the polls and the green surge in the polls and the number of constituents that that they've had, and the number of people that have been out on the doorstep and all the social media savvy stuff, the proof will be in the pudding, in the vote, if that makes sense. And I do think that there is a risk that, say they come third, say it goes Labour, Reform, Green, or Green, or Reform, Labour, Green, does that take some of the wind out of the balloon? Wind out of the sails, not balloon.
The sails, yeah.
Sails.
Yeah.
Wind out of the sails.
Or you could take air out of the balloon.
Or air out of the balloon. So none of what I said was right. Do you not think? I mean, we'll talk about the implications later.
I mean,
but
in
I think
my,
he needs
my,
to win.
I mean, I'd hate to. I'm going to save my thought on this for the next section because I just wanted to mention one more thing which we've missed out when we're talking about the sort of lows that political parties will sink to. So. Labour have, interestingly, suddenly found their voice against the Greens, right? Mm-hmm. Previously, this was a threat that they were ignoring. They were focusing a lot of their attacks on Reform. This last couple of weeks, Labour have been putting these attack adverts on social media One of them shows a green syringe alongside the words heroin, crack cocaine, spice, Green Party says yes.
Yeah, I don't like it.
No.
Yeah.
It's an interesting...
No, they've been going heavy on that also.
Yes, Starmer said the Greens' plan to legalise drugs is disgusting and would turn parks and playgrounds into crack dens.
Yeah, I saw that AI minister, not the minister for AI. Yeah, Mike Tapp, the minister that was created in an AI bot machine. He's been going nuts over it. It's the kind of shit he would love draped in a flag in a fish and chips shop. Definitely British. Swear he's British. Loves Britain. Hates drugs.
I mean, do you think that some of these things the Greens should stay shtum on? So, like, their policy on legalising drugs...
it's just not going to go down well, is it?
This is what I mean. Like, I wonder if there's a lesson to... I mean, we'll see what will happen. But, I hate to anticipate too much. But it will be interesting to see if they take from this, if they lose.
So that's
a softer approach towards some of their more left-wing policies.
Yeah. So I have to be really clear. I'm not having a go at them here. But intellectually, they might be right. Not in terms of... I'm not having a conversation about decriminalization or legalization, but intellectually, obviously, the way that we've dealt with drugs for like 20 years hasn't worked, clearly, right? Yeah. And I'm in favor of a health-based approach to drug policy anyway. Even though that might be intellectually right, sometimes in politics, and I hate that I'm saying this, but it's just true, you take, even though a policy is right, you don't talk about it in this way because you know it's just too easy for your opponents to say, you're going to give my 18-year-old son and daughter as they come out of university crack cocaine, basically, as like the state is going to sell, or like it's going to be legal to like buy crack cocaine at Tesco, if that makes sense.
Yeah. It's like the Ming Vars approach, which Labour had, and everyone, including me, was like, they're just taking the Ming Vars across the floor. They're just not saying anything controversial because they need to get elected, and the public is genuinely quite right-wing. But then it actually turned out that there was nothing inside the Ming Vars anyway.
yeah, that's true.
It was empty.
I don't think they have to be careful, though. I think the Greens do have to be disruptive. And if I was right in their electoral strategy, which I'm not, but if I was right, then I think they have. And that's when Mamdani was very disruptive in policy. But you have to take policy that everyone agrees with.
Yeah. Right? Yeah, and we know that's cost of living stuff, right? Yeah,
not heroin.
No. Not turning schools into crack dens.
Can heroin solve the cost of... No.
No. Okay. Right, we're going to go to a break now, but don't go anywhere as there's still loads to discuss as we get closer and closer to the polls closing in Gorton and Denton. Stay tuned. So we're going to continue the conversation about Gorton and Denton. Ali, I want you to read out the message you've just got, which I haven't heard yet.
So I've texted a... isn't this exciting? I have sources. I'm not
no
a journalist.
No need to brag.
No, I just... I'm
supposed
journalist.
To be the one with sources.
Yeah, this is the first one. So I've texted someone who I trust up there who's knocking on doors. And so I said, how's it looking? And I've just gotten a reply back. So I'm going to, I don't think this gives away who it is. Lots of green stakes up. I honestly don't know. I think the Greens might edge it, but I haven't been to Denton, the reform area. Mm-hmm. Looks like it's a green win.
Oof.
Which is surprising to me. I thought Labour would hold on.
Yeah. I mean, so let's talk about the political, the political conclusions, I guess, for each of these parties. So let's start with the Greens, because they were kind of the dark horse in this race. Like, this felt like it was going to be between Labour and Reform for a long time. And it does increasingly feel, and we've seen some polls now that have put the Greens out on top. We're talking before about Hannah Spencer's campaign. So just to refresh our listeners. So Hannah Spencer, 34 years old. She's been a plumber since leaving school at 16 and is currently training to become a plasterer. She's big on social media. She's got a very kind of fun, I would say quite pretty youthful energy, but, you know, got that kind of plucky green campaignery vibe to her. Zach Polanski has been very present in the constituency as well, campaigning alongside. The thing that is really interesting about a Green victory here is this isn't a typical Green target seat. So when the Greens are talking about expanding their reach at the next election, they're talking about the sort of constituencies where they came second in the last election. And they're mostly the kind of inner city, progressive, studenty places like Bristol, for example, parts of London, you know, Hackney, or the kind of rural... slightly more kind of Tory leaning constituencies which have locals that are very concerned about local issues, the green natural beauty of their area, ecology, water, you know, that, and we've talked about before how that is a fault line in the party. But it is interesting if you want to kind of map out where green voters sit. What's particularly interesting about Gorton and Denton is that's kind of neither of those, right?
Mm. Yeah. I actually think if you were to divvy this up, right, so if we were to go, what happens if Labour wins? What happens if Reform wins? What happens if Greens win? I think the most seismic result will be a Green victory. Mm. Because I think if Labour wins, yes, it shifts a little bit of the conversation around Starmer. He might have more time. If Reform wins, it gives them more momentum, but they have the momentum anyway, and everyone is talking about them being the next sort of the next government anyway, as the poll suggests. If Greens win, I actually think it significantly shifts the conversation for them, in that A, it takes the Green surge away from opinion polls and into a real poll, mm. right? Then the media just take you more seriously, the institutions take you more seriously, but also people know that they can transform this sort of online momentum into votes on the ground. That's one. The second one, I think, particularly given the three-way race and Reform's involvement, it allows Greens to tell the story that they're the Stop Reform candidates,
yeah.
Which is huge, because if you look at Caerphilly, Plaid obviously became the Stop Reform candidate and won that seat. And that's a story they're going to tell all across Wales now. You can guarantee every mm-hmm. Plaid leaflet is going to say, we're the Stop Reform candidates. Greens will not only be able to point to polls, but to a real result around the country. And I think it'll open up seats for them that aren't on their hit list right now. And so I think a Green result will be the most seismic. Equally, I think they need the win.
Mm.
I think if they come third specifically, I think it will take some of the air out the sails. See how I've swapped it around this time.
Nice.
It was wind out of the
air.
and then they could face the accusation of being a little bit too online, mm. not enough on the ground, not having the infrastructure, all that kind of stuff. Mm. So I think it'll be seismic if Greens win. I did also see a tweet from a journalist today, Kate something, I forget, who said that a source of hers told her that they overheard Zach Polansky on the train saying he doesn't feel confident. Really? Don't know if that means anything.
But I guess they shouldn't feel confident.
No, they're not supposed to win the seat.
And if they did feel confident, Zach Polansky, you hope, would know better than to announce that on a crowded train carriage.
Yeah, you'd hope so.
Because
can I ask? Okay.
I was just going to say, because we know that whenever there's a close by-election, even if a party feels confident, you always expectation manage to say, you know.
Yeah, can I ask you a question?
Yeah.
Keir Starmer, the implications for him.
Mm.
Give me your thinking. What are the implications for him? Obviously, if Labour wins, we know, mm-hmm. pretty much. We have a sense it's good. If Greens win, if Reform wins, which one's worse?
I think personally for Keir Starmer, it's worse if the Greens win. It's better for the Labour Party than if Reform win. Because if Reform win, I think that is going to bolster the right of the Labour Party once again. People like Mike Tapp, the MPs who fell under Morgan McSweeney's spell, that actually in these working class red wall areas, the best thing Labour can do is push right. Because you have to remember, these voters are seen as like the only voters that matter. And I'm sure we'll talk about how annoying first past the post is for voters and helping to manage which way parties direct their attention and everything. But I think if Reform win this, that is gonna give more wind to the sails of the right of the Labour Party, who are gonna think, actually, we need to push right. We need to go further and faster on immigration, law and order. You know, that is going to be our focus. If the Greens win, that actually should bolster the voices of the left of the party, who are saying, actually, we are hemorrhaging more voters, and this is true, to the Lib Dems and to the Greens than we are to Reform. We are far better energising our base at the next election, looking to those lost voters, bringing them back, and trying to introduce policy that is progressive, and that making those arguments to try and keep those voters, rather than trying to win back these Reform voters, who many of them, they might have voted Labour at the last election, but before that they voted Tory. Mm. You know, they're not ideologically aligned to core Labour values. They are voters who often vote, you know, kind of according to, I guess, how angry they feel with the government at the time. So,
yeah.
And I don't think that MPs are convinced that Keir Starmer could be the figurehead of a leftward.
Is it also not the case that it makes the Andy Burnham decision look worse if it's Greenwin. Or does that not matter?
I think that's probably true, but I think that is probably true. But I think, and while I do agree with that, I think that epiphany will come second to the broader question of what does this mean for our policy platform now?
Yeah.
And there was all this talk about, is there going to be a reshuffle? Would Keir Starmer bring much more kind of left-wing figureheads to the front of the party? Could you get an Ed Miliband chancellor, for example? If I were Keir Starmer and the Greens won, my first point of action would be to have a reshuffle to try and save my skin, but I don't think it would buy much time.
Yeah, reset number, what, 43, 44? Yes, that's certainly true. None of this will be enough for him to go now, though, will it?
I don't think so.
It'll be May.
Purely, again, because we still just don't have an obvious successor.
Yeah.
So if Labour win is an interesting question, where does that leave Keir Starmer?
Well, I think it does depend on the victory. I think it buys him time, certainly. Yeah. It might buy him cover in May, depending on how badly things go in May. Now, there's a problem with May, by the way, which we haven't spoken about, which is that the government was forced to U-turn on the cancelling of elections in a bunch of seats, many of whom are Labour. So now many people are anticipating May to be a little bit worse than it was going to be for Labour, because we're going to lose seats in lots of places that weren't supposed to have elections or weren't going to have elections. But I think if he, depending on the result, if he wins with a nice number, then I think it might buy him cover in May, depending on how badly it goes. And particularly because he visited it himself, he takes a little bit of it more on. It protects him completely from the Andy Burnham accusations.
Yes, it does,
a little bit.
It puts Burnham to bed for a bit. Let's just briefly touch on reform, what this would mean if a reform win. Apart from the fact that we would have Matt Goodwin as an elected member of the House of Commons.
We've both kind of...
Which is, you know... Which is
so that heroin isn't legal yet for me. No.
But yeah, what are we going to do? What would it mean for reform to win this seat?
So I tell you what, I've been a little bit baffled by reform's strategy. Nigel Farage has gone heavy on this Chagos stuff. Have you seen? He went to Chagos. Didn't he try to go to Chagos? They didn't let him in.
Yes, because just like they wouldn't let you into an RAF base or any kind of military zone. You can't just turn up at like Area 51 and be like, they wouldn't let me in. Or, you know, I can't think of any RAF Bryce Norton, you know. Of course, they're not going to let you in.
Can we count that as a deportation?
Well, that would be nice. What do you mean, though, that you... Hang on. Yeah. I just want to say, I'm so surprised that you haven't thought much of GB News presenter Matt Goodwin's by-election campaign after his campaign manager had to resign because he was participating in online discussions about Holocaust death tolls, where he asserted that 6 million Poles, including some Jews, had been murdered.
And has posted
many anti-Semitic and misogynistic social media posts. What, you didn't like his campaign?
I didn't know this.
Yeah.
This is crazy.
They had to suspend him.
Yeah, his campaign manager.
Yes.
I mean, reform. Oh. Like if you'd washed out the party name, I would have told you that's either Restore or Reform. I've just been surprised that Nigel Farage has gone so heavy on Chagos, because it may be an important issue, right? But no one on the door gives a toss about Chagos.
Local voters in Gorton and Denton who just want their wages to mean something and to be able to get a GP appointment and for their kids' school to be able to afford pens, don't give a flying fuck about the Chagos Islands.
But do you not think this is an interesting moment where ideology has superseded politics when it comes to Farage and reform? Because they're ideologically going after Chagos. It makes no political sense this week. So his PMQ question this week was on Chagos. How is it not looking to Gorton and Denton? Pick an issue that's important to people in Gorton and Denton, right? He hasn't visited Gorton and Denton as far as I've seen. Mm-hmm. It's been a really, really strange strategy. So it makes me wonder whether they don't think they can win.
Yeah. Yeah, they're kind of like pivoting away.
Yeah. To try and kind of call expectation management.
I do think it would be interesting, though, because as you pointed out earlier, Reform lost that carefully by election, which was supposed to be a pretty pivotal moment for them. The stop reform vote was big.
If they lose again?
If they lose again, I think it does slightly put a spanner in the works for this kind of reforms unstoppable. They're going to get all these seats in Parliament. Because when people say that, we have to take every poll with a pinch of salt, because it is, a poll is just a poll. It's a snapshot of that moment in time. But you're not polling the number of people who actually, when push comes to shove, do not, and the majority of people do not like Nigel Farage.
Yeah.
We know that most people don't like reform. What is the breadth and the depth of feeling for those voters, even if they don't like Labour, even if they're not convinced by the Greens or the Lib Dems, to come out and stop reform? And I think that's what's being underestimated.
Yeah, and that's it's not just how many people support you, but the fervency of opposition. Precisely. That's something Trump really struggled with against Biden in two, in his second election, was you want to motivate people to vote for you as well, but it's really difficult when you have a really motivated opposition as well who want to stop you. And I think you're right. Like, we've all, and bar you actually, of all the media I've done, I think you're the only one who's been a little bit more clear-eyed on, assumed that reform are on this sort of this runaway train, right? Their best poll has them, what, 30%? Mm. Of which, that's only 60% of the country who's going to vote anyway. Mm. They're not that popular in the country.
No most people don't like Nigel Farage.
Yeah. He's
like,
also
they
got
don't. Yeah.
Net negative favourability rating. Yeah, yeah.
And then you get stories like this story that was broken by the Lancashire Lead, which is the sister publication of the Lead UK, that the deputy council leader in Lancashire retweeted a post calling for a Labour MP to be shot.
Yeah, that was asked in
and PMQs. Nigel Farage would refuse to take action.
And refused
that.
To actually even comment on it in PMQs, because Keir Starmer directly challenged him to sack the person and condemn him, and he didn't reply.
Yeah. Yeah. I think these things, I think it's really easy if you spend a lot of time on X, as the reform, you know, as
or even just in Westminster,
which is shaped by X, to think that everybody is full of hate and grievance and everyone just wants to burn everything down. And yes, voters are angry, but most voters don't want to see their neighbour be deported. They don't want to see people get stripped of settled status. They don't want to see women lose access to abortion. They don't want to see people like Matt Goodwin spewing the politics of hate and grievance. They actually just want to get on with their lives.
You're kind of convincing me that they need a victory here.
I think, if not...
Because how often can you lose before you become a loser?
I think the wind and the air in both the sails and the balloons is going to be, well...
What a great call!
It's going to be a windy day in Gorton and Denton, I'll tell you that for free.
You've been on a nice roll today. You asked me to guess. What's your prediction? So I still think Labour are going to hold.
You think Labour are going to hold?
I think so.
I'm going to give it a... Greens.
You think we should invite Hannah Spencer on?
We should. I think, okay, my question for you, how many recounts is there going to be?
Two.
Two.
Yeah, yeah. I think it'll be that close. Mm. I think it'll be Labour by like 20 votes.
And timings-wise, just if any listeners are interested.
Go to bed.
Usually go to bed.
Yeah. It's going to be 4 a.m.
Yeah. Don't be a nerd. Nothing
exciting. No, you just won't get it. I don't think. Because I think if there wasn't going to go to recounts, it'll be at 1 a.m.
Yeah.
There'll be two recounts. It'll be 4 or 5 a.m.
Yeah. Okie doke. All right. Well, that is it from Politics Uncensored today. Join us next Thursday at 5 p.m. when we unwrap all the week's political talking points.
You can stay up to date with the show by following at Politics Uncensored UK on social media, where you can find me at Ali Milani Live.
And me at Zoe Grunewald.
If you've missed any of today's show, you can listen back and catch up at FUBARradio.com or via the FUBAR Radio app.
Thank you so much for listening, and we'll see you next week for another episode of Politics Uncensored.